In 2016, a man offered his, quote, unsympathetic wife for sale on eBay. The prankster went on to describe his wife as bodywork and paintwork, still in decent shape, and has some skills in the kitchen. And she landed bids as high as $65,000 before the site took the posting down. And whilst this tongue-in-cheek ad makes for a rather misogynistic story, there was a time when men really did take their wives to the market and sell them to the highest bidder. Hi, and welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. And I dedicate this episode to my friends, Michael and Morag, who are planning the wedding for next year. In Thomas Hardy's 1886 novel, The Mayor of Casterbridge, the protagonist sells his wife at the beginning of the novel, and slowly, like a Dostoevsky novel, the guilt and subsequent events slowly destroy him. And let's start today's episode with a few legalities. Traditionally, in England, up until 1857, it was almost impossible to gain a divorce unless you were perhaps a very rich, or indeed, a king whose wives weren't delivering the goods and needed replacing. And even then, it needed a private act of Parliament. The 1857 Matrimonial Causes Act allowed a husband to divorce his wife on grounds of adultery, and for a woman to divorce her husband if he'd committed aggravated adultery, meaning, as well as playing away, he was guilty of cruelty, incest, bigamy, desertion, or possibly all of the above. Interestingly, until the passing of the Marriage Act in 1753, a formal ceremony of marriage before a clergyman was not a legal requirement in England, and marriages were unregistered. Traditionally, you could have a Fleet wedding. That was a wedding at Fleet Prison, performed by a degraded clergyman for a fee. And by the early 18th century, there were around 40 marrying houses in such places as taverns. All that was required was for both parties to agree to the union, so long as each had reached the legal age of consent, which was 12 years old for girls and 14 for boys. Thankfully, though, common sense seems to have mainly prevailed, and documents from 1,000 marriage certificates from 1619 to 1660, and the Archdiocese of Canterbury showed that only one bride was 13 years old, 4 were 15, 12 were 16, and 17 were 17 years old, whilst the other 966 brides were at least 19 years old. Incredibly, in Scots law, the age in which a female and a male could be married at 12 and 14 did not change until 1929. Gretna is a Scottish border town, and it became famous for clandestine weddings, as English couples had to wait until 21 if they didn't have their parents' approval. Many couples would elope to Scotland for marriage, and to this end, we look to Pride and Prejudice with Wickham and his 16-year-old Lydia believed to be heading to Gretna on their elopement. Gretna, with its romantic connotations, remains a very popular wedding destination for many couples to this day. But traditionally, if you were a woman and you got married, it came with huge risks. Women were completely subordinated to their husbands after marriage. the husband and wife became one legal entity, a legal status known as coverture. As the eminent English judge Sir William Blackstone wrote in 1753, the very being or legal existence of a woman is suspended during the marriage, or at least is consolidated, incorporated into that of her husband, under whose wing, protection and cover she performs everything. Married women could not own their own property in their own right, and were indeed themselves the property of their husbands. And for men who tired of their wives before divorces became available, a not uncommon practice of wife selling would take place, and this would generally be seen at markets such as Smithfield. And for those husbands whose marriage wasn't working out to his satisfaction, he would generally take his wife to the market with a halter, usually a rope, but sometimes a ribbon, around her neck or waist, and to auction her. This would be a visible indicator that she was for sale. The new buyer would then lead his new acquisition home by the halter, traditionally only removing it when she'd crossed the threshold of her new home. And imagine a man getting the following gift from their friend. In the 17th century, English philosopher John Locke, writing to French scientist Nicolas Thénard, that, amongst other things, I have ordered you a beautiful woman to be your wife. If you do not like her, after you've experimented with her for a while, you can sell her, and I think you'll get a better price than a man received for his wife last week in London, where he sold her for 4 sous a pound. I think yours will bring 5 or 6 sous a pound, because she's beautiful, young, very tender, and will fetch you a good price in her condition. And just as now, sometimes you had to choose the right market to auction your goods. Another wife, described as middle-aged, fair-faced, proportionable, in length to her bulk, and in every way agreeable, was sold on the 6th of April, 1791, at a pig market. With no financial resources and no skills in which to trade, for many women, a sale was the only way to get out of an unhappy marriage. Indeed, the wife is sometimes reported as having insisted on the sale. A wife sold in Wenlock Market for 2 shillings 6 pence in 1830 was quite determined that the transaction should go ahead, despite her husband's last-minute misgivings. It was described as the following. He, the husband, turned shy and tried to get out of the business, but Matty made him stick to it. Her flipped her apron in her good man's face and said, "Let be your rogue, I will be sold, I wants a change." And it wasn't just the poor who got on in the act, and some men were just in the right place at the right time in history. This was Henry Bridges, 2nd Duke of Chandos and an MP. The Duke and a companion dined in the Pelican, Newbury, on their way to London. A stir in the inn yard led to their being told that a man was going to sell his wife. They went to see, and they saw the man leading her up with a halter around her neck. The Duke was smitten with her beauty, and he bought her, and he subsequently legitimately married her. And another story that could indeed be that great unwritten Jane Austen story of true romance. In 1826, John Turton sold his wife Mary to William Kay at Emley Cross for 5 shillings. After Kay's death, she returned to her previous husband, and the couple remained together for the next 30 years. Prices for wives varied considerably, from a high of 100 plus £25 for each of her 2 children and the sale in 1865, equivalent to about £14,000 now, to a glass of ale, or even free. The lowest amount of money exchanged was 3 farthings, 3/4 of 1 penny, but the usual price seems to have been around 2 shillings 6 pence and 5 shillings. Joseph Thompson was a farmer and certainly a very good orator, but certainly not a good salesman. He sold his wife in April 1832. As a large crowd gathered, he made the following speech. "Gentlemen, I have to offer you your notice to my wife, Mary Ann Thompson, whom I mean to sell to the highest and fairest bidder. Gentlemen, it is her wish as well as mine to part forever. She has been to me only a born serpent. I took her for my comfort and the good of my home, but she's become my tormentor, a domestic curse, a night invasion, and a daily devil. Gentlemen, I speak truth from my heart when I say, may God deliver us from troublesome wives and frolicsome women. Avoid them as you would a mad dog, a roaring lion, a loaded pistol, cholera, Mount Etna, or any other pestilence thing in nature. But now I've shown you the dark side of my wife and told you her faults and failings, I will introduce the bright and sunny side of her and explain her qualifications and goodness. She can read novels and milk cows. She can laugh and weep with the same ease that you would take a glass of ale when thirsty." He went on to say this about his wife: "She can make butter and scald the maid. She can sing Moore's melodies and plait her frills and caps. She cannot make rum, gin, or whiskey, but she's a good judge of the quality from long experience in tasting them. I therefore offer her with all her perfections and imperfections for the sum of 50 shillings. And after an hour, Mrs. Thompson was sold to one Henry Mears for a nominal amount and a Newfoundland dog. In Sussex, inns and public houses were a regular venue for wife selling, and alcohol often formed part of the payment. For example, when a man sold his wife at the Shoulder of Mutton and Cucumber in Yapton in 1898, the purchaser paid 7 shillings 6 pence and 1 imperial quart of beer. A sale a century earlier in Brighton involved 8 pots of beer and 7 shillings. And in Ninefield in 1790, a man who swapped his wife at the village inn for 1/2 pint of gin changed his mind later and bought her back. A bizarre turn of events happened in London in 1804 when a shopkeeper found his wife in bed with a stranger to him who, following an altercation, offered to purchase his wife. There were legal misunderstandings about wife selling. It was a common belief that once they were sold, they had no rights on their legal husband's property. One wife, who was sold for £15 in 1835, claimed that she was entitled to her first husband's property after he died. The man's relatives insisted the sale had been valid and he, therefore, died wifeless. However, the law thought otherwise and the ruling favoured the wife, which shocked the man's relatives because they could not understand how wife selling was actually against the law. The custom was even taken to the New World and the American colonies. The Boston Evening Post reported on the 15th of March, 1736, an argument between 2 men and a certain woman, each claiming her as his wife, but so it was that one of them had actually disposed of his right to her to the other for 15 shillings. The purchaser had apparently refused to pay in full and had attempted to return his wife. In an account of 1781 of a William Collins of South Carolina, records that he sold his wife for $2 and a half dozen bowls of grog. And sadly, for some wives-to-be, they didn't get a chance to make it to the altar, but they took their romance to the grave, as in this bittersweet story reported in the Dundee Courier in 1926. A love letter, written 62 years ago, yellow with age, but with still a faint scent clinging to it, was buried in the coffin of Miss Emma Louise Bayford, 82, of Brentford. The letter was taken to the graveside by Miss Backle, with whom Miss Bayford lived, and was placed in the coffin with a wreath of lilies. Miss Bayford would often say she once had a proposal of marriage, says Miss Backle yesterday. She accepted the proposal, but within a few days, the man fell ill, was taken to a hospital for an operation, during which he died. At first, she wanted to marry him before the operation, but her parents persuaded her to wait. The letter, dated 1864, contained the proposal of marriage, written in a beautiful Victorian hand. And lastly, a strange case from France. Not every husband wanted to sell his wife, and indeed, one Frenchman went to extraordinary ways to keep his. In the 1930s, Paris baker Henri Leterre had a major marital problem. Although his wife was apparently desperate to be faithful, she just couldn't help herself. And she had three affairs in as many months before he decided that something needed to be done. He visited a museum and came out with sketches of medieval chastity belts. These he gave to a man who made false arms and legs for veterans of the First World War. He asked him to make him one to ensure a secure means to keep Madame Leterre from consummating her infidelities. He brought his wife to the final fitting, and she pronounced herself satisfied with the comfort of the velvet-covered steel contraption and joked with her husband that he mustn't lose the key. However, sometime later, when one of her former lovers came to visit, one thing led to another, and he saw the apparatus she was wearing and was unable to remove it, and she became frustrated and emotional. The lover went to the police, and Mr. Leterre appeared in court on the 21st of January 1934 on charges of cruelty. In the trial, although Madame Leterre testified that she found it impossible to be faithful, the judge gave the hapless baker a 3 months suspended sentence and 50 franc fine. Well, that's it for another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one. And until next time, bye-bye.